There's something about him that's like, hey, man. That's right. That's what I like about them high school girls, man. And he's very like, all right, all right, all right. He's that guy. He's got, but it's got to be kind of seductive, like a little bit in the ear.
Can you say my name? Can you just say my name like that?
Mine. That's right, man. All right. You're listening to Maya Bialik.
Hi, I'm Maya Bialik, and welcome to My Breakdown. This is where we break things down so you don't have to.
It's Maya Bialik's Breakdown. She's going to break it down for you. Because you know she knows a thing or two. And now she's gonna break down. It's a breakdown. She's gonna break it down.
Maya Bialik's Breakdown is supported by Nutrafol. 30 million women are impacted by weakened or thinning hair, and I am one of them. If you are also one of them, please know you're not alone, and there is a solution you can trust to deliver results. Thousands of women have taken back control of their hair with Nutrafol. Healthier hair growth takes time, though. You'll begin to experience thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair in 3 to 6 months. And in a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after 6 months. More than 1,500 top doctors recommend Nutrafol as an effective, high-quality solution for healthier hair. I love Nutrafol because it is the best and easiest way to start taking better care of your hair today. Grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering the promo code BREAK to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere, and it's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time, plus free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code BREAK. We're going to be talking to Justin Long today. He's got a long career. He's the face of so many things that you will know him from. But first, one of my favorite faces that I know things about, Jonathan Cohen. That was weird.
I mind. That was weird.
That was weird. Yeah. Sometimes I'm weird.
You could have just stopped after one of my favorite faces.
In any event, Jonathan, we're talking to Justin Long today. He's built an eclectic body of work over the years. You might know him from Dodgeball, Drag Me to Hell, Live Free or Die Hard. He's just not that into you. He's the voice of Alvin in Alvin and the Chipmunks, and also just recently wrote with his brother and directed a really cool movie called Lady of the Manor with Melanie Lynskey and Judy Greer. Also, he's got a podcast and has had a podcast for quite some time called Life is Short, where he talks to really, really, really cool people who want to get personal with him. I hope to be one of them. But first, we welcome him here. He's a really funny guy. I'm just going to say that. I'm not just saying that. He really is a funny guy. I mean, his impressions are pretty incredible, and he shares some of them with us, which is really fun. Really, really excited. Jonathan, anything else we should talk about before we welcome Justin Long?
Let's talk to Justin.
Justin Long, welcome to The Breakdown.
Break it down.
So you're a basketball fan?
I am. I'm a sporty person in general. I'm a very active participant. I'm very emotionally invested in...
Do you yell? Do you get aggressive?
Yeah.
Are you hostile toward the other team?
You know, I'm a gentleman, as it were, when it comes to my cheering. I don't believe in booing the other team. You know, I went to UCLA, and I was at UCLA for a total of 12 years.
Oh,
and
right,
so
of course.
I went to a lot of games, learned a lot about sports etiquette. You're from Fairfield, Connecticut.
It's where I am now.
Oh, that's you were from there.
Yes, can't you see?
What teams do you root for?
Oh, that's a good question. When I was growing up, it was because there are some that are split. We're in the tri-state area, which is it's closer to New York, and so we were either Jets or Giants in football.
Right.
Unfortunately, my family was a Jets. We were Jets fans. Yeah.
That's rough.
We're hopeful again. We're a very hopeful group. And then the Knicks, we were Knicks fans.
Right, okay.
And, and Mets versus Yankees.
Ooh, yeah. That's where you got me. Okay.
I lost you.
That's all right. You lost me, but that's okay.
I liked rooting for underdogs. I was always into, into underdogs. I always like seeing underdogs win. Like, I always root for the Bills, you know, assuming the Jets are out of it, which they always are. I like those too, like the Browns. You know, I like to see teams that have had a run of tough luck succeed. I'm such a good person, Maya.
You're a very good person. That's really the take-home message.
Yes.
Which is why he agreed to do our podcast. He's like, she's an underdog. I do this.
Yes. Yeah, like charity. It's charity. Yeah. No, I was excited to do this. And I'll tell you who was really excited. My mother, I don't remember the last time I got that kind of reaction from her. Because ultimately, that's why we do all of this, right? Is to
make our moms happy.
We want our artwork on the fridge. And so she said, she really lit up when because we were a big Jeopardy family. And so.
No one reacts to Mayim more than 65 plus. That's our demo.
Oh, I bet. How great, though. Those are
loyal
the ones
fans.
I would most want to be.
Loyal fans.
Do you get a lot of like, we like you better than Ken? We prefer you to Ken. Yeah.
Sometimes I get, we don't prefer you to Ken.
Yeah,
I get
all the. Isn't that wild that people will, it's probably the only profession that I can think of, or maybe politicians, where people will tell you
exactly
really like deeply insulting things, but right. With a big smile, you know.
Like, I saw you in a magazine. I was very confused. You look pretty.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I get that.
I get a lot.
A lot.
How about, yeah, I get, you better, and this sounds like I'm bragging, but it's
you're
not.
You're better looking in person?
Yes. That's a tough one. Because then you think, well, what do I care what you like? That means millions of people, to millions of other people, I'm worse looking.
Well, actually, this is a good kind of endpoint for where a lot of people knew you from, let's say, you know, 20 years ago versus now. The first thing I thought was not, boy, he's better looking now than he used to be, but you are a man now and you were much younger in a lot of people's minds. So.
That's the most flattering thing anyone's ever said to me. Thank you, Mayim. I'm getting there.
When
did I finish puberty?
No, when did you start your acting career?
I always looked young. So I was older. I was deceptively older than people probably think. Because I was, I dropped out of school my junior year. I took a year off. It was the year a lot of kids were doing junior year abroad. And so I wanted to be an actor at that point. And so I went to New York and I did all the cattle calls. And then I got something that led to other things. So I kept deferring my enrollment, and I was 20 when I started professionally doing it, and but really, like, again, looked young, and so I was able to, and that was during a time, I'm sure you remember, where there were a lot of teen movies and teen
that's movies. When people were interested in teenagers.
Yes. Yeah. Dawson's Creek, you know, during that time, and so it was a great time to be a young-looking 20-something-year-old actor. And I started like 99.
Okay.
99.
And I don't know if you wrote this for IMDb, but I found it hilarious. Hold on one second. I need to read it, though, because it's adorable. It says, Justin Long, actor. A likable, boyish-looking actor with thick eyebrows and a friendly smile.
Yeah, I did write that. Yeah. No, I didn't. Oh, I don't know who wrote. I don't, isn't that
who
funny?
Wrote
I don't,
that? I think it's an adorable.
No, I don't know. At one point, it said on. Does it still say that? It still says.
I'm literally looking at it.
That's
yes.
funny. I it compared me to Tim Allen. At one point on Wikipedia, my dad, he was really bothered by this. Understandably, it said that he had. He wasn't bothered by this part. It said that he was Asian. That didn't bother him, but that he had died in a car accident. Which,
stop!
No,
that's a terrible story. Your father was a philosophy and Latin professor, is that right?
Yeah, yes.
He sounds like a hoot.
He is a hoot. He's very funny. He's got a great dry sense of humor. He was in the seminary for 7 years.
Wait, hold on. Like to be a priest?
To be a priest, yeah, at a Catholic seminary, and
how hot is your mom? My mom's so hot, she made my dad.
She got my dad out of the seminary. Yes, totally. Yeah, it's funny. During 18 to 25. I mean, really, like
those years. So wait, then what happened? I don't mean to make you tell your dad's story, but that's amazing.
We can never really get. We've never gotten like a clear answer, like why exactly. Of course, we're curious about it. I think it was a lot of things. I think it was the wanting to get married, wanting to, explore relationships. And,
he didn't want to be married to God. He was married to God for 7 years. He got the 7-year itch from God.
Yeah, he divorced God. He still, in a relationship with God, but they're just not.
They're polyam.
They downshifted.
They're polyam.
Yes, they're seeing other people. He left when he was 25, and then he became. But he learned so much.
A lot of Latin. I mean, the Latin thing now makes sense because
He translated a lot of manuscripts. He was into the Neoplatonists. So like Aquinas was his guy. There was a guy pre-Aquinas who was. This guy, five people have heard of, named Richard Fishacre, and he's known for solidifying the curriculum at Oxford of a very particular medieval studies program. Huh. So that's what that was his field of concentration, and so he had to, of course, translate a lot of Latin and ancient Greek, and he's an incredibly bright guy. But surprising. And my mom is kind of on the other end.
An actor, correct?
My mom's an actress. Yeah, or was, and then became a teacher and. When we needed to make some money, because that's where all the money is, as you know.
If it's not in acting, yes, it's in teaching.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm obviously joking, but she was an actress. Yeah, and so she's a lot. I mean, they're very personality wise. They're quite different. It's an interesting pair, but they're both very funny. So we were lucky to have.
And you're the middle of three boys. Are the others artistically inclined? Are they?
Well, I kind of got into acting. My older brother, Damien, was an incredible actor, is an incredible actor. And so I kind of followed him. It was always, you know, monkey see, monkey do. And he ended up becoming a teacher. He's a teacher. And my little brother is a really funny writer. And we do the podcast together.
Right. You do the podcast together. Also,
Life is Short, if your listeners want
to listen.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Not now. Don't listen now.
Right. Keep listening to us. But also, you just did a movie together that you co-wrote and co-directed. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks, man. I mean, that's a compliment, but thanks for mentioning it. I mean, it's called Lady of the Manor, and it's out. I'm not exactly sure how you see it. I should know that on Amazon. If you look on Amazon, it's with Judy Greer and Melanie Lynskey, who are two of my favorite actors, and we just love doing it. We did it right before the pandemic. We finished about like 2 weeks before.
Wow.
And in fact, when that happened, I remember you recently directed something.
Last summer, yes.
Last summer, yes. So with Dustin Hoffman, right?
Yeah, and Candice Bergen. And
amazing.
Yeah. It's available on Amazon Prime and anywhere that you rent movies. Yes.
Oh, great. Oh, good.
Yeah, I really don't like to talk about myself, though.
Yeah, you're deflect. Yeah, but I want to know about you, and I don't like to talk. This is a bad combination.
No, it's not good. So, but tell us about Lady of the Manor, because if you even watch, you know, just the trailer, you see there's a lot of really fun elements that get kind of strung together.
Christian and I were really always inspired by Odd Couple comedies. We loved Neil Simon's original, but we loved Laurel and Hardy growing up, and we were just drawn to those movies. The Frank Oz, What About Bob, and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Those were our always our favorites. Midnight Run, and so like. We knew we wanted that genre to concentrate on that. We felt like that was something we could tackle. And then we knew so many funny actresses, you know, like we were thinking all these actresses we know that are so, and Melanie and Judy, of course, right at the top of the list. And we just thought we should write one for two women. We thought, who better to do that than two men? We got lucky in the casting, and the ghost element is kind of more of a backdrop. It really is
right.
More of just a buddy comedy. So, and of course, we didn't have the money for a lot of effects, and so at a certain point, it is hopefully just these two women who are at odds with each other, and then having to team up and work together. But the backstory is that Judy's character died in the 1870s and is still living in this house, which Melanie Lynskey is now a tour guide for. She's kind of like a stoner, ne'er-do-well character, and gets a job as a tour guide, and she's terrible at it. And Judy's character, the ghost, it takes offense at how Melanie's portraying her, and so she starts bugging. She haunts her, but not in a scary way, more in like a really annoying way, you know. She doesn't leave her alone. And so then they have to team up together. It was so fun.
How do you come up with the concept for that dynamic?
Weed. We were stoned. We were pretty stoned. And my brother and I love to just hang out and talk and throw around ideas. And, you know, we record them. We'll record them if we latch onto something that we think might be something. And then the next day, of course, in the sober light of day, we start going through them, and you know, 98% of the time we realize they're ridiculous and not in a good way. And this one was one that we just thought there might be something there, and we just it continued to make us laugh. And we originally conceived it as like a like kind of a comedic psycho, you know, if Norman Bates's mother weren't compelling him to do murderous things, but rather just annoying him. And we're kind of like, it would kind of interrupt dates and get in the way when he was trying to, you know, be with, on a date and with a woman. And so it was more from that angle. And then we worked on that a little, and there was no way around the tragic. It just felt too tragic, that this guy's mother was dead and, you know, I don't know. So it kind of morphed into this.
Do you see yourself more as a person enjoying writing and directing and kind of being in that position? Or, you know, obviously there's not a shortage of acting roles, but just kind of curious if you like that, you know, if you kind of like that hat.
I love it. I love doing it. I love working with my brother. So we get to do that pretty regularly with the podcast. We have something else we're trying to put together for the fall. Yeah, I'd love to do more. As you know, it's a lot of work. I don't mean this in a – it's fun work. It's, you know, it's very, very fulfilling. But I remember the first movie I did after we directed, it felt like a vacation. It felt – I really appreciate just, you know, the ease of just doing one job now. And I had so much more respect for every facet of the process, and so I am so glad I did it. I want to do more, but I love acting and getting to do that. So I don't know. I still want to keep doing that. Hopefully, I get to.
Miami Alex Breakdown is supported by Splendid Spoon. Splendid Spoon sends delicious plant-based, ready-to-eat meals and snacks right to your door. Especially during the summer when I'm out a lot, that's when I find that I turn to foods that aren't really good for me, not really good for my kids. Splendid Spoon has fixed that. They take the work out of eating healthy. The meals are shipped right to my door, ready to eat. You just lift a finger, press start on your microwave. Splendid Spoon fits into any schedule. There's a meal plan for everyone, and every meal plan's customizable, so you literally can get what you want every time. They make clean, delicious food with real ingredients and spices. Each single meal is 100% plant-based, it's gluten-free, and also GMO-free. Eat well and enjoy more of your summer with Splendid Spoon. Get started today, save on an entire week of ready-made plant-based meals. Go to splendidspoon.com/break for $50 off your first box when you subscribe. That's $50 off at splendidspoon.com/break. My and Bialik's Breakdown is supported by BetterHelp. Life can be so overwhelming, and many people are burned out, but they don't even realize it. Symptoms? Lack of motivation, feeling helpless, feeling trapped, feeling detached, like extreme fatigue, and so much more. For me, burnout goes directly to heartburn and sleep. My heartburn starts acting up, and I have totally disrupted sleep. Therapy is something Jonathan and I talk about all the time on our Breakdown here. It has been transformative in helping me not only understand what stresses me out, but how to get through to the other side of it. And that's what BetterHelp is here to do. They are customized online therapy. It offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It is much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with someone in under 48 hours. My and Bialik's Breakdown listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/break. That's betterhelp.com/break.
We had Lamorne on the show, your buddy, and he told a story about you on New Girl, which, I mean, just cracked me up. Basically, you know, the short version is that he said you were the funniest person on that stage.
That's nice.
And he described it as that, you know, you would basically just not ever deliver your lines. Ever.
Okay, this is going to, this sound, yes, that's.
Is this slanderous?
No, it just sounds Mayim, as an actor, knows that this is this sounds very unprofessional. and I would do a take where I would I would do the lines. It wasn't like I refused to say. I just loved I loved playing with those guys so much that I think the truth is more like I would go out of my way to find stuff to do with them, to improvise stuff to do with them when it probably when it wasn't going to make the cut, you know, it wasn't like story stuff.
He would say that, like, for example, you would have to call him Winston.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was funny to, yeah, not get his name. I like the, I think it's fine to not get his name right and to get it just slightly wrong. But with conviction, sometimes I'll get people's name with conviction. I'll say that. Have you ever do that? Like, the entirely wrong
I actually avoid using people's names for this reason. Even people that I am certain there's no way that I'm getting their name wrong, I have that shred of doubt, and I'd rather just not say anything.
Well, I probably should have more of that. I would be wise to have more of that. But I like saying people's names. You know, I like feeling, I don't know, like even if it's a superficial connection, I like feeling personally connected. And so, in fact, when we directed the movie, we had a great team, and our producer was saying, we were so excited. We just couldn't believe that all these people were, I'm sure you know this, feeling now, that everyone was showing up for this thing that you wrote, that you came up with one night when you were on edibles, you know, that like a year ago, and you're, you know, and hanging out, and now all these people are there for to see this thing through. And so they said, I remember the producer saying, are you guys okay? You want anything before we start shooting? And do you have any requests? You know, and I said, because every time I'm on a set, I always wish everyone had, people had name tags.
Yes.
You know, wouldn't that be like the fantasy of, and so I said.
It's really not that hard to make happen though.
I know. And so I said that. I said, look, everything's great. I hate to, if I can request anything though, it would be. So I requested that everybody have name tags, and we got it. We're on it. They said, you know, very dutifully, we're going to do it. And so the first day we show up, and everybody had name tags, but they were those lanyard name tags, and it was only one side that said the name. And yes, and of course they all flipped around, and so I'm doing and they're right at chest level. To even look at it is potentially problematic.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, people must have not having a hard time with Mayim. That's such a unique.
They have a very hard time with it.
For real?
Yes. People say, "Why do you spell it like that?" It's like, because that's how they spell
Mayim.
It.
Mayim. What?
So
oh,
many
yeah, okay.
people think that I should spell my name M Y I M.
Oh yeah. Okay, that makes
so,
sense.
So, but my name is it's Hebrew for the word water, and so in any prayer book for the last several thousand years, if you're gonna, well, I guess not thousand, but since prayer books have been transliterated into English, the word Mayim, which is water, has been translated as being spelled M-A-Y-I-M. So every prayer book says, like, that's just...
Mayim. It's a pretty name.
Thank you.
How did your parents come... how did they come up with
it? So my grandmother's name was Mariam. That's Mariam. Like Miriam. And so the R was hard to pronounce because the... Hebrew Yiddish R is actually, it's got like a little bit of a. So they just would call her Mayim instead of Mariam. They'd call her Mayim. And my parents were hippies, and it was 1975, and the name means water. And
that's cool.
Yeah. And so they gave me that name, and there you have it. But people often tell me that it's spelled wrong.
Do Jewish people, when you go to Israel, do they just call you water?
Sometimes. I mean, people used to call me toilet water in elementary school. That wasn't positive.
God.
No, and it's pretty bad. In Israel, it's not a name, meaning it's an odd, like it's like, and Israelis are historically very direct. Like, why are you, that's actually an LL security agent, you know, because they kind of grill you before you get on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he said to me. Why this is your name?
Oh, that's funny. I like that they do that. It must feel very. You must feel so secure getting
feel very
on the plane.
Safe. They ask where you went to synagogue. Do you speak? Why don't you speak Hebrew? It's very, very elaborate. You have a very interesting thing that you talked about on Armchair Expert. Do you talk about this event that happened to you? We don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't.
Yeah, you had a very, very traumatic experience that also, and again, we don't, I don't want to talk about anything that you're not comfortable with, but I think there's something that's interesting about, you know, hearing about this story as you spoke about it with Dax and on Armchair Expert is like, things happen when you're a human. And for those of us who happen to be public people or someone that people are interested in, it means a lot more. It becomes a lot more. You had a very significant traumatic experience that was revealed because of who you are, you know, meaning it literally might not have been something people learned about if you hadn't been you.
Well, yeah, it's also probably wouldn't have happened had I not been known by these people, certainly. To nutshell it, and I hate to do that because people will be like, wait, I want to, you know, I don't know, it just brings up more questions. But you can listen to it on Dax's show, but it was, these guys spotted me at a bar and long story short, I was drugged.
You were given a substance without your knowledge that changed the course of your evening, as it were.
I think it was PCPs, but the way it came to happen, I know it sounds ludicrous that I should put myself in that position. And looking back, it was, and obviously there are things I wouldn't have done, but it was a time in my life where I was you can definitely relate to this. I was wanting everything to be normal and to not be, I was wanting to walk into a bar and to just meet people on neutral terms, right, and not have this thing be present, which is, and not to make myself sound like, you know, George Clooney or anything, but like, you know how it is when you're in a town outside LA or New York, one of the major cities, you know, people get, I'm going to sound like such a douchebag, but people get excited and they have a response to it. Not necessarily positive, but they have a reaction to it. And so these guys, I think they felt slighted that I'd been there a couple nights earlier with the actor Steve Buscemi, who gets it, you know, everyone he is one of the most recognizable faces ever. And so we were in this local bar and they moved us to kind of like a back room. And I think these guys felt, I don't know what their motivation was, but they approached me. When they approached me, they felt they had kind of combative and they felt slighted and they felt like we had disrespected them I don't know why. But I am still, but working on it, a real people pleaser, you know, and I just wanted things. I didn't want them to, they were saying things like, oh, Mr. Hollywood, you know, and I said, oh, I'm just like you. And I was buying them drinks and stuff. And anyway, there's no excuse. I should not have put myself in this situation, but I ended up smoking what I thought was, weed from a bong, and it was PCP. I think it was laced with something. I've told the story to people in private security since then, and they're like, oh, it was definitely, this is something that apparently they were familiar with this type of thing. And so I was like, really, my whole body shut down, and they were driving me around. And I think they were wanting to film me in some compromising
of course
position, you know, but I thought they were gonna kill me. I mean, it was really,
how long was this experience?
It went on from, I remember because I was with it, we had just gotten off of work. It was my last night in town, in this town in Michigan, and it was probably we got there kind of late, maybe 11 or 12, and I walked into the bar, and this was back when, to deal with the oddness of people, you know, just the strange social change, and I would take two shots of whiskey right when I got there, just to kind of deal with the weirdness. Not advocating for that. It was obviously at the time it was a big mistake, and I definitely don't drink like that anymore. I just can't. My body's, you know, I'm old now, but
you're a man.
I'm a man. I've become a man, and so it was about 11 or 12, and then the bar's closed at 2, and so these guys proposed going to a secondary location, yeah. And so whatever, that's how it happened. But when I jumped out, I still.
So did you jump out of the car at like 3 a.m., 6 a.m.?
Yeah. Oh,
noon,
I'm sorry.
Noon the next day.
No. It was about 3 a.m.
Okay, got it.
I remember because You know, from a thing like that, it's weird. I remember strange things. I couldn't tell you what they look like.
Yeah.
Never pick them out of a lineup. But I remember weird details. Like, for example, I remember after I jumped out, the car, you know, because when you jump out of a moving car, as I now know, I didn't know this, but you.
I've only seen it in the movies.
Yes. When Spider-Man lands on his 2 feet. But I.
Take a hard roll.
You roll, and so the car ran over my leg, and so when I stood up, my leg was like, you know, really bent in a crazy position, like this, but I remember looking down, and I remember this thought, which was, well, two things. I remember thinking, I wonder if I broke my phone, which would be unfortunate, and even weirder, I wonder if. I saw blood pooling out of the sides of my knee from, and it was a little tattered. My jeans, these jeans that I had, that I, you know, there's that pair of jeans that you just wear all the time. And I remember thinking, oh, what a bummer.
I had a significant car accident, and the first thing I thought was, I'm bleeding all over this dress, and the dress is on loan. That's literally.
Isn't that funny?
What speed are you going?
It was about 30. It wasn't like we were not speeding. I remember thinking they were going to stop at a. I remember my plan was they were going to stop at a red light, and there was a red light, and I was just going to get out and make a run for it, and or make a crawl for it. Because I think I would have been. I don't know. I wasn't capable of dialing. I remember not being capable of dialing numbers. I remember thinking that. And so this felt like the only way out to jump out of the car. But they went right through the red lights, you know. So they were definitely. And the scariest part was when they were trying to calm me down. You know, it's okay. They passed my hotel. And that's when I knew when they were trying to like mollify me. That's when I knew they were – that was really – there was real impending danger. And so that's why I decided to jump out. And this cat, weirdly enough, I saw headlights. There was no cars around, but I saw these headlights, and it happened to be a cab. And I kind of shuffled my way to the cab on this bloody leg. And when I got in, my energy must have been wild, you know, because he right away.
Well, you were in shock also.
Yeah, but I remember feeling like – I do remember this feeling, such relief, like joy almost.
Yeah, but I'm saying joy. Like clinically you are in shock, meaning you're operating on a completely different plane of existence at that point.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really frenetic and knows
it's
what
– adrenaline,
Yeah. So
did he take you to the hospital?
No. He wouldn't drive me anywhere.
Oh.
Get out of my – he wanted me out.
Yeah, well, you probably looked like a person who was bloody and out of his
– I wouldn't want me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so I – two of the PAs that I was with came up to the driver's side door, and I could tell by their reaction that they weren't in on it with these other locals. And so I just walked back to my hotel, and I woke up with – just in more pain than I'd ever been, my throbbing leg, and it was, you know, swollen. It was a wild.
Yeah, what was the injury? Like, you didn't break anything, thank God.
No, and the doctor, I told him what happened, you know, and he thought it was because I was inebriated, you know, and so I was, my body, I wasn't tensing up, and so fortunately I didn't break anything, but there were just massive contusions. And, you know, that what I failed to do was the proper physical therapy afterwards. So my leg is still quite numb.
Right.
And it's just like a reminder of scars. It was a reminder of, and emotional scars.
My MBLX Breakdown is supported by Rothy's. We all know it feels really good to get compliments on what you're wearing. Have you ever seen someone wearing a colorful pair of flats and thought, oh my gosh, those are so cute? Chances are they were Rothy's. Rothy's are the perfect shoe for commuting, for traveling, and everybody notices them. They're known for their chic pointed toe flats, but that is just the beginning. They have tons of iconic head-turning designs in bright, sophisticated colors, and Rothy's work great with every outfit. I have found this to be true. I love my Rothy's. I love my flats, but I also love my booties, and they come in a really, really cute mustard color. I don't know if they're available right now in the mustard color, but I love my Rothy's booties. I also love my loafers. Your new favorite shoes are waiting. Discover the versatile styles you can wear absolutely anywhere. And get $20 off your first purchase at rothys.com/breakdown. That's rothys.com/breakdown for $20 off your first order.
My MBLX Breakdown is supported by Pair Eyewear.
Individuality is a combination of all the things that we do to express ourselves. We're a unique mashup of all of our favorite things, and there are so many ways to express yourself. I like to celebrate all that I am and explore who I can be with customizable prescription glasses from Pair Eyewear. I am wearing them right now, and it's very easy to change the look of your glasses because Pair Eyewear's base frame and magnetic top frame combination makes it easy for me to switch up my style. So right now I'm wearing, I got them as sunglasses. These are blue. That's the blue base. But then I put these on and it looks like the whole universe. It's kind of hard to tell from this camera. Jonathan, tell them more about Pair while I keep changing my top frames.
Get glasses as unique as you are. One pair, infinite styles. Starting at just $60, go to paireyewear.com/mime for 15% off your first purchase. That's 15% off at
paireyewear.com/mime. Well, I was going to say, did you, like, I'm just curious, like, did you, like, oh, I better go into therapy? Or, like, were you a therapy person? No.
No, no. I have since become...
have you done EMDR?
No. Huh. I'm curious about it.
Well, yeah, EMDR. Well, just the reason I'm asking is, for people who do EMDR, they, you know, it's a regulated, you know, kind of treatment for trauma. But my mom did EMDR and what she said is that, like, things that were happening at the time of a traumatic event that she hadn't even registered at the time, like consciously.
Oh, I bet.
Would
yeah.
all of a sudden like come into focus. The way she described it, she said it was like she'd be like, you know, focused on an event and you're awake. You're working with a, you know, a therapist who's been trained in all these methods and you have to like do things to prepare and blah, blah, blah. But she said it was like a Zoom lens that just started like pulling back. And she said like all of a sudden there were like she could like look around the room that like things happened. A lot of people report this. Anyway, I was just curious because I have not done EMDR. Hoping to try it this summer. You typically choose kind of like one event or kind of class of event that you then focus on and they kind of like take you there conceptually.
Would your event be the accident you were in?
That's a great question. I wish that was the one. There's a lot of things, you know, that I'd be interested in focusing on, let's say, in this arena. You know,
but it's got to be one thing.
To my understanding, I'm not
one at a time usually.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That
well,
makes sense.
My mom had to literally like come up with like for her therapy, like that was part of the prep is like you come up with a list of things. I mean, for me and my car accident, it's so interesting. It's kind of odd. I've never thought of kind of like doing work on it just because like all the work I've done since then feels like it's on it. What I wanted to ask is how many years from then, like, did you get into therapy?
Well, I was in therapy shortly after that, but I was focusing on something else.
Got it. Right.
And it was... I just never, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit this. I never thought to address that. I just thought, well, I survived.
That happened, right.
That happened. Oh, well, that happened. But it was a little bit like that. I'm sure this is common of an incident like that where you want to just move on. You so badly want to.
Oh, who wants to think about that, right? I mean, look. And the fact is, and, you know, the reason I'm kind of, you know, really interested in kind of how you're presenting it is I think the way a lot of people experience a lot of things like that happened. And if I just think about it more, it's just going to make it worse. Like, I don't want to think all those things.
Yes, I know.
Because none of us were raised with the concept of like, oh, you actually hold negative experiences in your body and in your and they impact your entire life without you even knowing it. So I think it's totally accurate that you'd be like, well, that happened and I seem fine. And indeed, you probably were fine, but yes, all it takes
fine
is
enough to function.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
That's what I love about I've been getting for the last year really into meditation. That's what I love about I have this 10 it's called 10% Happier app that Dan Harris started, and they I've been retraining myself to focus on things like that and to not negate those feelings, those when they come up and those thoughts, but to consider them and to kind of feel them. It's been a tremendous help. To your point, it's exactly what you said, which is to kind of address it head on. So you're not burying it. I remember my dad always used to talk about being stoic. You know, he was there's that stoicism, which I think he may have gotten wrong. As bright as he is, but I think it can be really unhealthy. I now know it can be unhealthy to just bury things. And so I've loved exploring things like this trauma, and I truly don't have any problem talking about it. But it's interesting. For so long, I was so afraid of it ever getting out, and right. I had so much shame about it, I suppose. So it's weird. Even when Dax brought it up, I remember kind of tensing up and then I said it and it was out there and the world didn't change. I just felt kind of like, oh, okay, it's not as nearly as bad as I'd been thinking it would be.
Well, I really appreciate you kind of letting us go there. Again, I was not looking for gory details.
Well, you can hear him on Dax's show.
Yeah, make sure to tune in.
It's funny that you mentioned Dax's show and hearing about this thing. And I felt like I just kind of like was retreading. And I apologize if I'm kind of going over the same stuff and not doing it as completely. But it really is long. I mean, I talked to him for 3.5 hours, you know. But it's funny because I had Bobby Moynihan on on Life is Short. And my brother's always giving me shit about just rehashing things that I've heard on other podcasts. And I did. That's exactly what I did. I'm not saying you did that, but that's exactly what I did with Bobby. I had just listened to your podcast with him.
Oh, and we had such a good time with him.
Oh, it was great. I loved it. And also, you had such a sensitive touch. The way you extracted some of these, really personal things from him about, I thought it was so interesting about how he dealt with his parents' death. And it was such sensitive stuff. And you had such a light, compassionate touch. And but I so much of what I was saying, Bobby kept saying, yes, how do you know this? Where did you hear this? And I felt so embarrassed. I was
we had Matthew McConaughey on. I don't know if you listened to that one. I recommend interviewing him any day of the week. Jonathan, what was the first thing I asked Matthew McConaughey?
The first thing Mime says is, do you know who I am? And he kind of pauses and looks and he's like, no.
That's awesome.
No, but
what compelled you to ask him that?
No, I didn't. Okay, I shouldn't have asked Jonathan to tell that story. I didn't ask it like.
I think she said, do you have any idea who I am? Uh-huh. Like, why are you here?
If it makes you feel better, I know for a fact. He didn't even have to say it out loud. I just knew he didn't know that I was an actor. I think he was just really, I mean, not to belittle both of our shows, but I think he was really making the rounds with that book.
Exactly.
Green lights. Did you listen to the book?
No, I read it with my eyeballs.
I love
it. Oh, man. The audio version is.
I mean, I'm sure that's like a whole, that's a trip.
He's got the best.
That's
got. Oh,
be
he's got the best voice.
Well, he does have a very good voice.
I mean, man, the way he tells those stories. it's so green lights. It's so. That's the one thing I ever did on SNL was an impression of him. And I felt so nervous going in and so insecure about it because it really wasn't one I felt was a strong one for me. But that's what Lauren wanted to see. He was like, that's the one they wanted to see. And I talked to Bobby about this because Bobby was in the same sketch and he was – and everyone's – and so all these people are doing – SNL performers are doing McConaughey. And I had one or two lines as him and it was such a wild I was so in my head about it. I've done plays and stuff and I just thought like, well, it's one thing, you know. But you know that feeling when you only have like one or two lines when it's – the stakes are that much higher for some reason. Like you think that much more about
– Sure.
The few words that you have to say, oh, it was
wait, what did you say? Remind us.
I don't remember, but it was. But you know, the impression, the way I've been able to do it is that it's got to be really intimate, you know, because he is. I know him. There's something about him that's like, hey, man, that's right. That's what I like about them high school girls, man. And he's very like, all right. He's that guy. But it's got to be kind of like, kind of seductive, like a little bit in the ear.
Can you say my name? Can you just say my name like that?
Mime. That's right, Mime. All right. You're listening to Mime Bialik.
I got chills. Yeah.
I do not know who you are. I mean, that is, I love that he said that. I absolutely don't, but I think you're That's fantastic. Amazing. All right, all
keep
right.
Keep going on that. Say that, you know, you don't look at all recognizable. No, just keep going.
Jonathan will send you a script of the things he'd like.
I think I know you. I may know you. I know you from a dream. You came to me in a dream. I was floating down the Amazon in my birthday suit, and I saw you floating there like an Aztec warrior. I don't know if that's wrong. Yeah, he was. Yeah, he's better like this. And I had to project. You know, I'm on stage, and so I had to do it kind of like. And I just felt immediately horrible about it. And you think immediately, oh, I'm going to want another take on this. And then it's like, well, sorry. Saturday Night Live.
Do you do other? I like impressions. Do you do other impressions?
Oh, I love them. I love them. I, you know, for a long time, I was doing. I proposed doing Sam Rockwell. Because Sam was somebody that I'm so glad for many reasons.
You have to really know what Sam Rockwell sounds like, though.
Well, you will ask Sam a question.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have a specific
hey,
Sam.
Hey, man. Hey, Jonathan. Hey, man. What's going on? What's going on?
What are you doing today, Sam?
Hey, man. I'm going to the store, man. I'm getting I got the play tonight, so I'm taking it easy. My fucking throat is killing me, man. I had a matinee yesterday, so I'm taking it easy. I'm gonna get some chicken soup. You know, they got this bone broth on Second Avenue. It's fucking awesome. They make it with pork bones. Fucking awesome. Sam was a good friend of mine, but before he was known to everyone, you know, it was one I couldn't do. There's some that, you know, I was so glad for many reasons that he became
as big as
he became. But selfishly, I'm like, well, good, now I can trot out my Sam impression.
And you do a good Keanu Reeves, I've heard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's very earnest. Yeah, everything is, I don't know, it's this. What is that line he said? I used to do that line in John Wick. Are you... people are saying I'm back. Yeah, I'm guessing I'm back. Everything is very earnest and sincere. God, I love him. He's just the best.
It seems like there's a level of confusion.
A little bit, yeah. But befuddled, maybe. But, you know, but then convicted.
I have a very specific Keanu Reeves connection because I've never seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I mean, I remember when they came out. My parents were strict in weird ways, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was like something I wasn't allowed to see. But in any event, Keanu Reeves was in the Paula Abdul video for Rush, and it is a very beautifully shot video, and I'm a Paula Abdul fan. And it's literally like one of those things where the way that they shot this video, like he's like an Adonis. Like he's this beautiful, beautiful man. And I remember I would cry. I would watch it and cry because he was so attractive.
Oh, my God. And so weren't you, you must have been.
He was as an actor. So
you must have wanted to see more of him. You must have been like,
well, so then The Matrix came out however many years later. Yeah. And I was like, this is like my movie. Like this is. And so it was like this person who I loved so much is now in this movie, like articulating like all these like deep for me, like very deep things that I, you know, resonate so much with anyway.
Oh, yeah.
That's my Keanu Reeves story.
Well, you were your parents. Was it R rated? Was it because
I couldn't see.
Me too.
Yeah, I couldn't see R rated. I had an older brother, which seemed he really just seemed to exist so my father could show me how different girls and boys are. Meaning, like boys can see this, and boys can stay out, and boys can do this. But yeah, very old school. My dad he passed away 7 years ago, but you know, like picture Al Pacino. That was my dad.
Yeah,
like went to school with Al Pacino. They all talk like that when you're from the South Bronx, and like I was sent to bed if like something came on TV that was like considered too racy, and yeah.
Wow.
Very
wow. So
strange.
Do you remember the first kind of taboo movie you saw? Like
my father's parents, my grandparents had moved to Florida, which is what Jews do. And sure. They took me to see Dr. Detroit.
And Dr. Detroit.
It was like a terrible Dan Aykroyd movie. And there was breasts. There were topless women. And I was like, what?
Breasts?
I was like eight. And my parents were like, you took them to see what?
Oh, that's so funny.
And I had like a bag of candy, like a bag of, you know, those gummy Coke bottles and like a soda.
Yes,
like
things, I remember those, the wax ones.
Things that did not happen. So anyway, I think that I never went to stay with my grandparents again unsupervised.
Oh my God. Well, I remember my first one was Stand By Me. R-rated. My parents were like, you should maybe watch this because it's, you know, kids my age. And I think they were willing to, there were a couple bad words in it.
I feel like National Lampoon's Vacation was one also, like, that I remember seeing.
But Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was R. That was
I didn't see that. Like, I got a whole list of things. I wasn't allowed to see Top Gun.
Oh, you still haven't seen it.
Oh, I haven't seen Top Gun. I had never seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I recently saw that. Though there's like I've never seen Flashdance. I wasn't allowed to see that.
I haven't either. We have a question on our show. We have a lightning round. I hope you can do it.
Yes, I am going to come play. We have a lightning round too, which we'll do in a second. What's your lightning round?
One of our questions is, is there a movie? What's a movie that you're embarrassed to admit you haven't seen?
Oh, I got so many.
I know.
That being said, it is our rapid fire breakdown style with Justin Long. What was your mother right about?
Right about?
What was she wrong about? Maybe we should start there.
Well, what was she right about, like, recently?
Just in general. This is not a hard question, friend.
Oh, about life. About, like, advice she gave me. I'm sorry. I'm taking it to – she's been right – what was she right about? She was right about
– go ahead.
Well, certain – you know, I always used to get – she was often right about some red flags in relationships.
Oh.
She was right about the business, at the acting, show business being challenging for the psyche and the ego. And she was definitely right about that. And she'd be right about what a joy it is to cook. I've recently discovered that. And
okay, here comes another hard one. What was your father about?
He was, let's see, my father was right about the going to as many museums as possible, learning as much about history whenever you travel. That's also something that I've grown to appreciate a little later in life. He's been right about a lot. My dad was a very attentive father. I got very lucky, you know, like he would go on camping Boy Scout trips with us and stuff, and he wasn't as crazy about sports and stuff, but he always came to the games. You
he was a Latin philosophy professor, you know? He had to give the guy a break. Okay, location that promotes your best mental health.
I have a place in Massachusetts in the Berkshires on a lake. And so being on a lake, being on fishing or just sitting on a dock at the bay.
Sitting on the dock of the bay.
I thought it was ready. Just sitting, looking out at this lake.
Nice. Do you have a mantra? If you don't, what would it be if you did have one?
Yeah, man, these are good. These are challenging. It would be, the reason we called our show Life is Short is because it's obviously a hilarious pun, but with Justin Long. It's something that I like saying out loud.
Got it.
And I like the reminder that life is short. And so maybe that.
Okay.
Maybe that, to appreciate it, just to enjoy it and enjoy life.
Who's been your best spiritual teacher?
My favorite meditation teacher is Joseph Goldstein. I'm often inspired. I'm easily inspired. Mark Epstein. I just read a great book by Mark Epstein, Going to Pieces Without Falling Apart.
Uh-huh.
He's a guest on our podcast coming up. My parents have been really inspired. My grandma, though, if I had to say, my grandma hit a level of fuck it about life that was pretty inspiring. Is she? I'm sorry.
No, that's also a good mantra. This is
fuck it. Who said that? It's a little Ferris Bueller-y. Ferris Bueller is a good spiritual advisor. I all of his moves. John Hughes was, if I had to follow somebody, I'd follow him.
Moment of best intuition.
It was a personal one. It was to go and see about a girl.
Okay.
It's very Matthew McConaughey of you.
I was going to say, do you want to know what Matthew McConaughey said? I said to him, like, what's been your moment of best intuition? He was very quiet. And then he was like, it was out of the corner of my eye. I saw something moving. It was, and then he like named a color. It was crimson, and it was her. It was his woman walking across, you know, his plane of perspective.
No, she wasn't walking. She was just gliding. She was gliding right off the ground. She was levitating, man, on this force field, this energy the likes of which I had never felt.
It's okay. Last question. Who are you most competitive with?
Leslie Jordan. No, sorry. I would say competitive. That's a good question. I used to be much more competitive, I think, than I am now. But I think it's whoever I'm playing Monopoly with. For some reason, whenever I still regress back to like, man, I used to throw. I get weirdly competitive with Monopoly, and so in that case, it would be my girlfriend recently that I played with. But I'm rarely competitive. And now I've gotten to a point of fuck it, maybe inspired by my grandma, where I truly just think, well, it wasn't meant to be. Hmm. I've gotten really good at that.
It's been really nice talking to you, and thank you so much. This was really, really fun.
Likewise. What a treat. Yeah, and thank you for being so nice. And I can't wait to talk to you more.
I wonder if he has any like residual emotional hesitancy or like sort of sparks of concern when he meets people in public.
Yeah, he mentioned that a little bit. And I mean, it's such an unusual, you know, kind of story and experience. I really appreciated how honest he was about like how much he kind of like didn't think he had to do anything about it, you know? And it's true, like, you know, I come from this like, go to therapy, like process it, do it, you know? And for most people, like that's not the first thing people go to. And I think there's that fear of rehashing it and I just need to get over it and like I shouldn't be upset about it. And I just, it's very, very interesting to me how he talked about it. Another thing also, like there's something about funny actor energy that I don't like you around. I don't like how you act.
You don't like jokes? You don't like fun?
No, there's some. I think it's...
What happens?
I don't know.
I laugh? You don't like laughing unless it's laughing at with you. Unless you're the joke teller.
No, I think, in all seriousness, I think, like, Justin, he's a very, very, you know, he's a very sweet guy. Like, he's like a good guy. He's like a guy that if I, you know, got to work with him, it would be really fun and really awesome. But yeah, there's something about when I'm with people like that who like, you know, it's a lot of my life is like that personality and like working with them. There's something about having you part of it that feels very like, stay out. I'm just being honest.
Again, hoarding all the fun for yourself. Jonathan, you can talk to doctors. You can talk to experts who want to talk about the brain, but no one who tells jokes.
Anyway, I'm sure we can delve into that another time.
If anyone wants to make a list of the people I am and I'm not allowed to talk to, they can do so at the Instagram, at Bialik Breakdown. We can also tell the story of how I was wearing our MBB sweatshirt and someone asked me, I was in a store and someone asked me, hey, what's that sweatshirt? Oh, it's a podcast I'm, you know, part of. And they're like, what's the name of the podcast? And I said, Mind Bialik Breakdown. And they said, what? I said, Mind Bialik Breakdown. And they said, is that English?
From our breakdown to the one we hope you never have, we'll see you next time.
It's Mind Bialik Breakdown. She's going to break it down for you. She's got a neuroscience PhD or two. One fiction, one fiction. And now she's going to break down.